I'm Will Harris, and today's program has been brought to you by White Oak Pastures.
Meet Your Maker. I'm your host, Rachel Wharton. My guest today is Ben Eisendrath, who is the second generation owner of Grillworks in Michigan. He makes custom grills for chefs and other affluent folks, or people who are completely obsessed with grilling. And these are way, way, way beyond a Weber. We're not talking Cadillacs of grills or even Ferraris, but more like Bugattis. So customers include Tom Brokaw, Matthew McConaughey, Stephen Raichelin, basically every major barbecue guru you can think of. Who else? Adam Perry Lang, Alton Brown, Christine Amanpour, and the very first customer, in New York City at least, was James Beard. Dan Barber has one up at Blue Hillstone Barns, and he calls it less like a tool than a source of inspiration. Ben, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So since people are listening to this and not watching this, I think the very first thing I would like you to do is describe what these grills look like and why they are different from what the round little kettle grill most people envision when they think about a grill.
Well, these are Argentine-style grills, so the surface is completely different than an American-style grill. They have a V-channel shape with a little bit of a tilt so that the juices go down into the basting pans in the front.
So when you say V-channel shape, so we're talking like they're like a stainless steel box, right?
They are giant stainless steel boxes, yes.
And there's like so tell us what's different. Like, what does this V-channel mean to me as a grill obsessed person?
The V-channel means that it catches juice instead of letting it go into the fire.
Uh-huh.
So instead of having big flares when you're using an open fire thing, you can grill over an open flame.
So that's the other major thing that's different about these is that it's not like you don't just put charcoal in a little recessed pit. It's real wood.
Yeah, it's really designed for whole wood.
Right.
So you can use charcoal too, but whole wood has more flavor because there's still some moisture in the wood. You can taste the differences between the types of wood.
And then there's like a little cranky, like a crank that you pull in your laundry from your brownstone tenement that you can raise and lower the meats so that they can, as the flame flickers higher or lower.
Exactly right. There's a big crank wheel on the side, which is both cool and functional.
Both cool and functional?
Yeah, I mean, they look really cool.
Oh, cool, not like temperature.
Well, okay. It is cool to the temperature, right. but it's fun, it's tactile, you can actually, you know, operate the grill. This is an engaged grill, you're not just sort of going off with your beer.
Uh-huh. An engaged grill. And so tell me a little bit how this grill came to be. How did this big square stainless steel contraption, which are usually custom built for people, come to be?
When I was a kid, my father was a foreign correspondent for Time magazine, and he was stationed in Chile, was covering the coup down there in the 70s, and he put us in Argentina so that we wouldn't be killed. And during that time, he fell in love with Argentine grilling, which uses these V-channels and the height adjustment. And when he came back to Michigan, took us all there, he couldn't do that kind of grilling because there was no machine that could do it made in the States.
What did were they different in Chile? Were they way more rustic, or what? Is this something like your grill actually exists there already?
Chile does some of that kind of grilling. Uh-huh. It's most strongly done in Argentina and Uruguay.
Mm-hmm.
They both have equipment that you'd look at it and think, well, that's sort of similar to what Ben's grills are, except that we cleaned them up, made them last forever.
Right.
Fixed a few things.
So it's like a big flatbed thing with like the with almost like an oven like grid on top, and then something down at the bottom that can catch the amazing juices. And I remember you saying that was actually, it's not just like catching the juices and then like rebasting the meat. Like for your father, like this was actually something a little bit even more advanced, which was the French technique to save them and use them.
Yeah, he's a big Francophile also. Mm-hmm. So when he was over there, he started doing a lot of things with sauces, and the grill enables him to use the drippings for sauce. So at the end of the meal, you can mix it with your spices and your wine and make a great sauce out of it.
Well, how old were you when this was all happening?
My first memories are of Argentina, so I was about 5 years old.
5 years old. And you remember? Do you remember the grill at that point?
I do remember the grilling in Argentina. He didn't have to make a grill when he was in Argentina.
He was already there.
But in Michigan, I earned my allowance by stamping the serial numbers into his grills.
So the first one, I think I remember you saying, took some time to create. Do you remember the early iterations, what they look like?
Yeah, they were a lot uglier.
were they still stainless steel, or were they like other metal?
He played around with a lot of different kinds of metal, but they either would corrode or melt. And so he settled on stainless steel because you can pretty much predict what it's going to do, which is hang around there.
And did he make the very first one that he thought, when he had found perfection, was that one he'd actually built himself, or had he already started? I know you said that because you're in Michigan, you started working with people who rebuilt cars, but did he build this first one from scratch by hand?
No, he went down the street and bothered a metal shop.
And then, so how soon after that, like how did it go from like his kind of obsessive passion to build this thing to a company?
Well, once he came up with the one that endured,
uh-huh.
He didn't really change anything after that. So from about 1979 to 2006, uh-huh. The grill stayed exactly the same. You couldn't get anything custom. It just was the way it was. And the way it became a company is because he wrote a bunch of letters. He was so proud of his new invention. One of them was to James Beard.
Right.
Just completely on a lark. And then he got a call one day from somebody who called himself Jim Beard. And he didn't know who the hell that was, but he figured it out.
And so I remember you telling me this story earlier that he went. He came to New York City, brought a grill. Right.
Right. And Beard didn't let him leave with it.
Have you been to the Beard House recently?
I have not.
Is it? Do you think it's still there? Do you have any idea?
He used it for his summer cooking school.
Uh-huh.
So it's probably not there.
You don't think so? Because I think the house is still... I mean, all the cooking stuff is still
there.
Well,
now you're
making You should... Have you ever been in touch with them?
With Beard?
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, he died in 85.
No. With the foundation that now, like, their offices are now in his house, his townhome.
I have not been.
The showers. You got to... Oh, this is... Okay, this is what we got to do next. You've got to go to the Beard House. There should be an entire... I bet it's still there, and there should be an entire dinner based
on I'm always a little bit worried. We have his testimonial. I'm always a little bit worried that the Beard Foundation is going to say... Right. That's old. You got to stop using that.
Or like, you owe us $150,000 every time you mention his name.
I sort of leave that sleeping dog lying.
Maybe you can forge the metals and like kind of like, you know, like your smith. Is it a stainless steel smith? Are they smiths? Smithies?
Metal artisans, we like
right.
to say.
So Beard obviously had lots of influential friends in the food world. Is that what kicked it off?
That totally kicked it off.
Right. And when did the customization begin with you, maybe even?
The customizations completely started with me because right. I'd grown up thinking, why aren't we doing built-in grills? Why aren't we doing bigger grills, ones that have independent surfaces? Lots of ideas. And so once I took it over, I just sort of went nuts with it.
You were really already thinking, why aren't we doing built-in grills?
Yeah.
Why? How? Like, how did that even occur to you? As like a 16-year-old, or like we're talking like a 22-year-old when you're building your own, you know?
Well, growing up, you go around to people's houses that uh-huh. have these other grills. And they're built. They have built-in ones
In their patios.
Yeah, in their patios mm. or in their restaurants. And mm. I'd look at it and think, how come we don't have one like that?
Right.
Makes complete sense. Plus, the Argentine-style installations, you know, they're very easy and they're usually built-in. They're not usually freestanding grills.
And for someone who has never installed a grill, when you say a grill installation is very easy, what does that mean?
That means you're not running any plumbing. You don't have any electrical to worry about. This is fully natural grilling, so you're just building a fire,
right?
And then you have the crank wheel system that raises and lowers it, so it's just simple.
So your grill kind of plunks into like a counter the same way a sink would, except no plumbing, right?
Yes.
It's like blink, it just goes like right
just
into
plunks.
Right. So okay, so well, how did you end up taking over the company, and how has it changed since?
Well, my dad stopped making the grills in the late 90s, and I was nostalgic, but didn't really have time to do anything about it. And then I just couldn't take it being gone. We were on a fishing trip. He actually offered to sell the brand to this guy who was part of the Charbroil family.
Uh-huh.
And I pretty
was
much
that on purpose or by accident?
Dove between them. I'm like, you can't do it.
Well, wait, so first of all, was your dad just accidentally on a fishing trip with another grill person? Or did they become friends because of the
that part was an accident.
It was an accident?
We were all fishing in Argentina, uh-huh. and the host family, this guy, uh-huh. was married to a woman who was part of the Charbroil, bigger company.
That's crazy. The Charbroil guy was like, yes. Was he like, did he know what was in front of him at that point?
Well, my dad seized on the opportunity to get, you know, to sell the thing off.
Uh-huh.
And I said, stop.
That's and so you quit. You were then in technology.
Yep.
Living in DC. And so what was the first thing that you did? Built a website.
The first thing I did was grab the old shop drawings, which were literally mm-hmm. greasy pieces of paper with uh-huh. the old drawings on them, and then I digitized them, and sent them around to different shops for quotes on building the models that uh-huh. my dad had. And once we had those going and started selling a few grills, then I started working on the built-ins and the other designs.
And did you already have a roster of chefs at that point? When did like the big city food f- Foodgencia find you?
Well, Dan Barber came back from Spain.
From Blue Hill Stone
Barns. In 2008. Uh-huh. Yes, from Blue Hill. And he actually called us. It was before I knew who he was. And he was just inspired by the grilling that he saw in Spain and found us probably just through the website. And I went up and met with him at Blue Hill in Manhattan.
Because in Spain they do something similar as well. It's open flame. You can catch what's there. You can adjust and lower.
Yep. And right. There's some very respected restaurants that have grills that look a little bit similar to ours.
So what was how did you start working with them? Blue Hill Stone Barns is obvious. If you haven't been there, you can probably imagine that it has to be a beautiful, everything there has to be beautiful and pristine. So what's the first thing that you did? Like, where the hell did you put this thing at Blue Hill Stone Barns? Is it in the kitchen?
They have a little patio that's mm-hmm. between the dining rooms. It's sort of an L-shaped dining room.
Uh-huh.
And they had it right there. They put the first grill right there.
So they were at, and is that where it still is?
It's where the new grill is. We've built them a second grill now.
And so the grill became a feature of the restaurant at that point because everyone could see it, I imagine. And they have to go out there. Like, they're actually preparing your food. They go, like, leave the kitchen and go out there and do whatever it is there. Do you know what they're doing on the menu right now?
Not right
now. I guess it changes constantly.
It changes all the time. We're generally surprised by what they're doing. One time they were using pork bones uh-huh. as charcoal.
Are you serious?
Yes. So they were using everything uh-huh. from the animal.
So they were burning. They were burning the bones of the animals that they had already cooked
for fuel.
Right?
Yes.
Could you taste a difference?
It was very hot. I couldn't tell.
You couldn't tell.
I couldn't tell.
But I know you. One big feature that people like about these grills is that you can use real wood, which can impart different flavors.
That's right.
Just the same way you do when you're smoking.
Yeah, because there's still some moisture in it. In charcoal, there's no moisture left. You just have heat.
Right.
And if you have whole wood, you get the flavor of that wood.
I still want you to, so tell me, why can't I just take a bunch of cherry wood and throw it on my Weber? What's the difference?
There'll be an inferno because of all the juice will uh-huh. drip into the fire, and uh-huh. then you won't be able to control the heat.
Hence the V channel.
Hence the V channel and the
there
height adjustment.
Okay. Oh, so back to Blue Hill Stone Barns. So Dan Barber is now obviously obsessed with these grills that you've built him. And I recall you saying to me that you're like two artists working together to kind of perfect this thing. So you've built, like, how is his, like, with the second iteration, what did you change and what's custom about it? What have you done for him?
Well, they actually went further toward Argentine grilling with uh-huh. the first grill. And they used it so intensely, they really destroyed it.
And meaning the metal, like, it was eaten through, or?
It was warping. It was just not built for that kind of amazing abuse. So uh-huh. we were just thrilled that they were using it so much and so hard.
The thing's basically, what you mean is, like, it was basically on fire all the time.
It was on fire all the time. They used it for it, you know, almost every dish touched the grill.
Really?
So they just wore it out after about 4 years.
Yeah.
And we sort of started designing the new grill about 2 years in when we saw what was going on.
Uh-huh.
So what was happening is that we're both learning from each other.
So pieces of it were starting to just erode as if they had been inside a volcano.
Yes. Yeah. I looked at that grill and I'm like, it's been on the surface of the sun or something.
I haven't been to Blue Hill Stone Barns in at least 3 years, and to me it seems like, when did you build that first one?
2008.
It might have been. I feel like that grill, if you say that almost every dish touched it at some point, that it must have so profoundly affected this menu from the last time I was there. It's kind of fascinating to me because I feel like the last time I went was maybe around the period where everyone was obsessed with sous vide, as I was saying, which is like almost the exact opposite.
Yep.
And I'm really curious to see how. I would love to go eat there again. I'm just going to have to save up my pennies. But yes. And to see how it's changed.
Well, they put so much grilling into the menu. Some of it is biochar based, so they're grilling the the herbs mm-hmm. in the fire. So you're getting the smoke of those herbs in the fire. They're cooking a lot of the vegetables actually in the coals underneath the grilling surfaces.
Uh-huh.
You're going to taste a lot of grilled.
So here in this like one of the most it is probably one of the most expensive restaurants in the Northeast. You have this. He's basically become like a, what is it? What are you called when you're obsessed with fire? A firebug? Is he just out there tending his grill? I'm kind of fascinated by this. I feel like there's a grilling book from Dan Barber in our immediate future. But we're about to take a break, and when we come back, I want to talk more about some of the. I mean, like you have a video on your site from Stephen Raiklin about how, you know, the barbecue genius. I'll talk more about how people are using it and how it's different, like how things might be different from a different grill. And when we come back, this is Meet Your Maker. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
White Oak Pastures is a 146-year-old multi-generational family farm that works in cooperation with nature to produce artisan meat that is safe, healthy, nutritious, and good to eat. Without fail, we ensure that our production practices are economically practical, ecologically sustainable, and that the animals are always humanely treated. We never falter in our determination to conduct our business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
This is Meet Your Maker. I'm your host, Rachel Wharton, and our guest today is Ben Eisendrath from Grillworks, a company in Michigan that makes incredible grills. For tell us a couple of other chefs in New York City where the grills are actually at work in the kitchen today.
Well, Seamus Mullen has been doing a lot with his new grill and Tertulia.
Uh-huh.
And Stephen Raiklin isn't really a New York guy, but he's a Northeast guy.
We have international listeners.
And he's one of the very early chefs that publicized the grill.
Because he just was completely enchanted with it.
He was enchanted with it, and he went to my parents' house and wanted to see it in person way back when, and my father was just like, who is this guy? He's just showing up at our house.
He came unannounced?
He came unannounced,
grill pilgrimage.
And he got no discount. He bought the grill. Uh-huh. So, and he's been using it for a long time. He bought a personal grill many years ago.
There was one for him to buy? It didn't have to be made?
No, you have to...
You have to order in advance.
They would order... my parents would make a few in advance. Now they're all to order.
Oh. And would they just be sitting around in your driveway?
They'd be sitting around in our barn in northern Michigan.
And how big is the average one?
The average one is 42 inches wide. That's 42? The most popular size
now. Like three microwaves side by side.
But the original one is 24.
24. Yeah. Small guy.
Good for just family use.
Mm-hmm. So, Stephen, when you read the quotes on your website, I mean, people are just like, it's a work of art. It's the most critical tool ever if you're interested in grilling. I mean, this is what people that you respect their opinion are saying over and over and over. So I'm trying to get at why. Tell me why. When Stephen Raiklin thinks this is the greatest thing for grilling ever, that's a really big deal. So, like, what is he able to achieve with this? Like, perfection in heat, in moisture, all of the above?
I'd say all of the above, but I think the most important thing is the ability to grill over whole wood.
A whole wood.
And the ability to control the heat with the height. So you have a lot of things that exist in other grills, but they're all in this one.
Uh-huh.
And it's a nice package.
Right. And you can rotisserie.
You can rotisserie. All the surfaces come off. You just lift off. Nothing's attached. So you can replace things. You can put things in the dishwasher.
Mm-hmm.
It's all 304 or 316 stainless steel. So you just can have it sitting out there uncovered, and it's going to last forever.
Is it almost more like going back to the past, and it's going back to more primitive ways of cooking?
It is.
Than going forward in some ways.
It is. It's going away from the convenience factor. There's no knob. You don't leave the grill.
You probably definitely don't.
You should be tending that fire, and it's fun, and everybody's mesmerized. So the grill is really the center of attention during these grilling parties. It's not a lidded thing. Doesn't go away. The food doesn't go away.
Right. Can you have one inside?
Yes, you can.
So people have them in their kitchens.
People have them in their kitchens, actually around Brooklyn.
Really?
Yeah.
Anyone we can, like, just people?
Just people, but there's a very enthusiastic customer who might be willing to talk about it, for sure.
They have one because it's an open flame in your kitchen. That's got to be, like, the best party. I got to get invited to
it. It's like in a little fireplace.
Uh-huh.
So it's a fireplace in the kitchen next to the stove.
Do they have the rotisserie attachment?
They have the rotisserie. They have the crank wheel. It looks pretty cool.
He's cooking right over an open flame.
He says he hardly uses the stove anymore.
He always, but that's, I mean, that means that every time he eats, it can take him like 2 hours.
No, it takes about 15 minutes to get the fire going. Because remember, you don't have to wait for coals.
Oh, true. You just build the fire and light it as if you're building a campfire.
Build the fire, light it, start cooking. You don't need to wait.
Actually, so how does, so do you, how, so the way, you know, you build like your Weber grill, you put the charcoal in there, you completely use up an entire can of lighter fluid and then you throw five matches on there. How do you build a fire in your grills?
It's a lot more like building a campfire or a fire in your fireplace.
You make a little, make your little teepee.
Exactly. Make your little teepee. Use whatever you want to start it, really. Uh-huh. Just make sure that nothing weird is being burned underneath it when you're cooking.
Uh-huh.
So you can use a starter or something if you really need to, but just wait until it's just the wood burning and then start cooking.
So what is what's interesting about Seamus? What's he doing at Tertulia?
What's he cooking? He's got one of our first grills that has a fire cage at the back.
What does that mean?
The fire cage, you burn the whole pieces of wood behind the grill, in his case, and the coals drop out of this cage and work their way forward to cook with. So he's actually creating the charcoal on the fly.
Right.
And charcoal is tends to be easier for a restaurant to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
More charcoal, a little less wood.
Because it burns more evenly.
It's a steadier heat.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're doing high volume, you know, you don't want to be moving the grill up and down a lot.
Right.
So we started doing these fire cages. The newest kind is called the Inferno cage.
And that's what Barber has, right?
Yes.
The Inferno. I remember him saying that. When I first found the Inferno, that's basically how his little quip begins.
So we've taken the cage off of that, and now we're applying it to other grills. So you can build, you can get the charcoal going on the fly instead of having to have charcoal as prepared already.
Right, and well, so when if people are just using pure wood, it means that there's literally a kitchen person whose job is just to raise and lower the stuff that's sitting on top of the flames.
They tend to burn the wood a little off to the side in the restaurant, and then when it's burned down a little bit, they start cooking over it.
Wow. This is like moving the campfire like right inside to like a 4-star kitchen.
But you start thinking about the wood as the seasoning agent.
Uh-huh.
So if you have charcoal and you're using just a little bit of wood, that's the seasoning. That's the taste.
And I think that's got to be one of the biggest things that's appealing to chefs. It's like how, it's like a whole new way to flavor food. Something that never, way to be creative and just, it's almost like never ending with herbs and like anything you can think of that would burn.
Yes.
Right.
It is never ending. You can go completely off the deep end on the flavors.
Deep end things?
Deep end things would be the biochar.
The biochar. Is anyone burning like whole spices?
The actual spice? I don't know.
Like cardamom pod?
Dan, if anybody.
Yeah. I've got to go check this out. I'm sure he's got to be like, you know, Dan's pretty savvy.
He's pretty savvy.
He's probably hard at work on his Inferno, the first ever Inferno cookbook.
Yeah. I can't say enough what a great partnership that's been for both of us.
So how do you, you said you learned a lot from just building a second grill. Was that how you came up with the new firebox? So that you're actually essentially helping people create charcoal.
Yes, they do. They do something like that in Argentina and Uruguay. And so we just took it and made it operate faster.
Right.
And so there's a real chimney effect in these cages, and it burns the wood and reduces it to charcoal in just a few minutes instead of, you know, a half hour.
And what it's creating is this incredibly high quality hardwood charcoal that for a long time was really hard to find here in New York City, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's creating it. The big thing is it's creating it on the fly out of whatever you want to create it out of. And it gives them the chefs another surface to grill over. So there's the really hot fire coming out of the top of it is now a surface for searing. So they can put things over that cage if they want to do a real quick sear.
Right. It's like having like a cast iron, you know, like those old cast iron stoves in the middle of your house. You can make pancakes on top of it. Like use it in every.
Like putting your food into the top of a volcano for a minute.
So, is it ever? Does anyone have, like in your experience? Has anyone ever used that like full on a volcano effect? Is there like some dish somewhere that's like we just stick it on top of the flame, the like incredible flame for like 15 seconds?
Yeah, many chefs are doing that now.
So
I mean,
it's
a new product, so there'll be only a handful right now, but I know they do it at Blue Hill, and I know that
like
Seamus
roast
is doing
a whole
it.
Egg.
Well, they just touch it. It's just really quick, just to get a little bit of smoke.
I have to see one of these in person. Oh, and I was gonna. What? How do you use your? Do you have? So you have three. You have because you. I should explain that you grew up in Michigan in cherry groves, cherry farm.
Yep, cherry orchard.
Cherry orchard. Yeah, orchard. That was the word I was looking for. But you were working in technology in D.C. So you now split your time also in here in New York City, where so many of your clients are. So in your primary home, is it one of your grills? You have one of your grills in your actual apartment or house?
I have three grills in the backyard.
Three of them, like from different iterations.
Yes, I have the one my dad made me 18 years ago. Still fine. And then I have a larger, you know, more for parties, 42-inch grill. And then I've got a prototype that it's just a prototype. Can't talk about it.
Do you just constantly tinker with it?
I'm always tinkering with the designs.
It has devil horns, and then the next day.
Well, these crazy chefs you mentioned are what make me inspire me.
Do they ever come and like hang around the prototype and like you?
Yeah, I mean we did that for Stone Barns. Actually, one of Dan's chefs, Summers in Northern Michigan, so we were able to do a lot of talking right on site while we were doing the prototype.
Yeah, I bet that whoever that was just got like the plum gig that summer.
Well,
hey, I'm going to go perfect our grilling techniques. I'm hanging out.
Well, this
is
Adam Kay, and he deserves a lot of credit for the grilling program over there.
A lot of credit for a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
What was that? Oh, so how do you use it? What's your go-to? Is yours what's the model? What should I call them?
The Grillworks 42.
The Grillworks 42. So when you're cooking on your 42, like on a Tuesday night, what do you usually make? What are you doing?
On a Tuesday night, I'll just alert my friends that the test kitchen is going.
Really?
Uh-huh.
There's like a text blast.
Well, my backyard would be the test kitchen.
Right.
And a go-to during the summer is whole salmon on a bed of dill. And that sort of takes a little bit of the biochar idea, but it's fresh dill, about an inch of it on the surface, and you butterfly a salmon, which we catch in Michigan, open on that bed of dill with just some paprika and lemon and cook it very slowly. It poaches up through the dill. Wow.
Is that also kind of drawing from, I guess, the Scandinavian influence that are in that area too?
Yep.
That's pretty interesting.
You can use other herbs to do the bed on, but But you know, you get a little bit of the flavor from the herbs, and it protects the fish really nicely.
Are you also? You must be using cherry wood.
Of course.
Yeah. Or do you ever like? What about cherries themselves?
We use cherry in the basting pan. So we put wine or cognac or alcohol of your choice in the basting pan with the cherries, and then the juices, you know, keep going. And my dad does a lot of duck hunting, so there's wild duck usually
with cherries.
Involved. Yeah.
Amazing. And then each summer you have a big, huge. Do people
the orchard party?
Orchard party, and how many grills are in action during this thing?
Usually four.
Only four.
I
pictured this pilgrimage
four
where everybody
42-inch grills is pretty good capacity.
Yes. Oh, is that why it's called the 42? Yes, that's why it's called the 42. I just imagine like, I just the obsessed pulling like you know almost like the wagon trains across Texas in the 1800s. Like everyone pulls up with their grill. That'd be, you know, like circle the wagons.
We don't make it a BYO grill thing,
right? A BYOG. Although at some point it's like you know because the traditional grilling world is very much about competition and I could you know have
well,
you ever
barbecue.
Been? Yeah, barbecue.
There's a difference.
Yes, that's true. Yes, very good point. But there's something that seems very primal about real barbecue, which is, you know, slow and long and heat to the side. And this is something similar too. It's like that primal thing because it's flame and wood and the way you're supposed to be grilling when you had no other way to cook your food.
Grilling is better for impatient people.
Oh, yes. Or yes. Microwaving. Most of all. But what was it? Where was I even going with that one? Oh, but I could totally see. Like, have you ever been to a real barbecue competition?
Yes.
Yeah. So could you see like the Grillworks version?
I couldn't actually. It didn't seem like the right
crowd.
It's not even.
Adam Perry Lane could maybe go through.
No,
both.
Oh, you totally could.
Yeah, he could do both sides.
He can do both. There's a lot of sauce and a whole lot of time in barbecue. Mm-hmm. And it's great stuff, but I really like the direct fire, you know, open way to grill.
But that could be what your competition could be. It wouldn't be taking barbecue and slamming it on your grill, but like a bunch of people who are obsessed with this tool, this way of cooking, and like seeing what they can all do with, like, you know, they're all getting together and talking about it.
Well,
convention.
It's very sort of religious, you know, the barbecue guys. I sell a lot of grills to the barbecue crowd, but they're adamant. They know that this is a grill.
Right.
It is not a barbecue.
Yes, that's true. These words mean, like, there's somebody out there is just, like, wanting to throttle me because I'm using these words interchangeably when they mean very specific things to specific people.
It's okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I've one of the things you should totally go judge, like, Memphis in May or something just for kicks.
I'd love to one of these days, yeah.
So,
but they'd be like, he's a griller. He doesn't know barbecue.
Right, true. But you do know smoke and flame.
I do.
And how to manage it. Stephen Raiklin probably, I would imagine that a couple of people who own your grills also do those. have the huge smokers in their backyard too. They have everything.
Often. And a lot of serious grillers have a grill for each type of grilling. They have, you know, a Green Egg, they have a Grillworks grill, they have a smoker, an offset smoker, so they can do everything, and that's great.
Do you ever get together with the makers of those too? Like your dad was on the fishing boat with the charbroil guy?
No, I've come in contact with other grill makers for sure, like Kalamazoo, they're another Michigan company. They do sort of a Mac Daddy gas grill, but we sort of have friendly,
right?
You know, spitting matches.
Yeah, those are the ones, like the big. Those are like the big clamshell that every huge vacation home has on the
like
patio.
A really, you know, beefed up version of the grill that everybody has on the patio, and that's sort of our problem with it.
But yes, but yours could essentially just be right there too. Like it's a rectangle.
Yes,
it could go right in the same place.
It's a rectangle that produces tastier food.
So well put. The things that are top of mind all the time, like what are the issues? What do you as someone who creates these grills for a living? What is the thing you're thinking about most right now? Is there some particular custom one you're trying to work out, or what are you obsessing about right now?
Right now, I'm obsessing about, I guess, the chefs most. Collecting everything that they, you know, dream of when they. So usually they'll get one of our grills and then they use it for a while and they come up with all these
things that they wish it had.
Which is how we figure out what the next model grill will be. So it's filtering through that stuff and then trying to make sure that we don't lose the vision of our grills, which are exposed fire, you know, an engaged grill, not a box.
Right.
That you close up, because some of these things are, you know, if you go too far in one direction, closing it up, you end up like one of those other boxes.
Right.
And I don't want to be that.
Or, I guess it's like, could you make one where I had a starter button and then all of a sudden you're now making everything else?
I get that all the time.
Really?
Yeah. And I know in that instant that is not a customer.
Right. That's very funny. So, you were actually just saying that we're here in Brooklyn, listeners, and that you were over at Reynard's, which the grill is basically like a centerpiece of its kitchen, I imagine. And you were taking pictures. So what were you hoping to find out? Why were you there watching them work on it?
I was taking pictures because I want to show our shop back in Michigan how they're using the grill for practically everything. So they have all sorts of different foods on it. They've got a fire on one side and none on the other. And they've got it set up in the line, you know, so that the metal guys would never just automatically know how a chef's line works.
Right.
You know, so we can come up with things like, you know, heat shields or a different way to orient something so that it'll be more pleasant to work with in a kitchen, you know, instead of just outside. Outside, you've got a lot more leeway. But in a kitchen, you have to be cognizant of not cooking the chefs.
Yes. Yes, that's true. So, but, I mean, for the people who are building them, they may never have even been in a restaurant kitchen like these.
Yeah, true.
They're used to working with people who put them in their backyard.
I actually fly my chief engineer to see some of the kitchens. So, Stone Barns... I brought him to Stone Barns. We actually did some grill upgrades in the field, and he came, and so he got the whole tour. But yeah, it's definitely not something he would normally see.
And he builds them full time. They're all built by hand.
They're all built by hand.
With, like, you know, we're talking like steel workers. They're like molding.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
blow torches.
Their background is in classic cars, exotic cars, and yacht yacht equipment. So the level of the finish is amazing. But they certainly would not have been in a kitchen very often.
Do they still do the cars as well?
Oh, they do some. Of course, you never get that out of your blood.
Well, we're almost out of time, so I feel like you should tell people where to go to see. If you still have no idea what the hell we're talking about, you can see this grill in action. You can like actually scroll over each piece of it, and they'll tell you what's going on. And Stephen Raiklin has a video about how he uses it and why it's so important to him. So what's your?
Yeah, we don't pay those guys either. We don't pay those guys.
Yes, I mean, they like some trade in cherry wood. So what? Your website is not Grillworks, but it's Grillery.
www.grillery.com.
And one day, maybe one of these babies will be yours. Thank you very, very much for coming on Meet Your Maker.
Loved it. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook
and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information.
Thanks for listening.